Önce
Manim, ist auch Kamp in.
Amir.
How are you?
I'm doing good and how are you, Jay?
I'm good, thank you. You are in. I think we are having a call now. We can start. It's a minute past 10. Comrade Eunice.
Yes, Dr.
Morning.
Vaslangu. I'm well, Dr. Vaslangu.
Conjoin now it's traffic day. Yeah.
So you're asking after my health, so I'm telling you as a doctor, I'm informing you that I'm well. If I tell you I'm well, that's a generic response, right? If you really want to know about my health, you'll have to ask my doctor. And so it applies to Willie and to Dennis and so on. So I'm just being nice to you and saying, okay, doctor, I'm fine, thank you.
And what is the difference of saying, comrade, I'm fine?
No, that's what I always do. It's boring.
You are
Anyway,
easily
the
bored.
answer. Okay. You know, half the time I talk nonsense. I don't know why you'll even listen to me. Okay, sorry.
Hi. Thank you. Honorable members, thank you all. Let me also thank Team PBO, Team Salga, and I saw FFC is on the platform also. You're also welcome. We are going to deal with the two presentations today. They are there on the screen. I've welcomed all of you, honorable members and the colleagues and all the stakeholders. Do we have apologies, Secretariat?
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, Chair and the honorable members, colleagues. Chairperson, we received an apology from Honorable Nita. She might arrive late in the meeting, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. Any other apology?
No, Chairperson. We didn't receive any apologies. We also invited the provinces we haven't had from colleagues with respect to apologies. So we assume that colleagues might join and honorable members, the chairpersons and their committees, if their schedules allow.
Yeah, very important statement that you make at the end, if their schedules allow, because we have just been saying that I'm sorry. The season that you are in now is very hectic. We have back to back meetings, some meet double park, the other one you can't even park, you have to apologize. But it's something that is not encouraged because your participation and level of concentration is compromised. But there's nothing we can do about it. We have to finish the work that we've started so far and focus on other issues. But unfortunately, late after NA National Assembly. The first presentation that is on item number 3 is the consultation with SALGA on the Division of Revenue Bureau. And I'm made to understand that the delegation from SALGA is led by my Honorable Mayor of Temsilia Hani on behalf of SALGA. NCMEM is going to lead the delegation. And Honorable Mayor and other members of the team, you are hereby requested to make a presentation in 30 minutes, and I leave everything in your hands for 30 minutes, Honorable Mayor. If you have more than one person to make a presentation if you are not the only one to do that. 30 minutes at most. Thank you. Over to you, Honorable Jikhali.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I was just putting the video on just for a moment so that it is clearly recorded that it's me who's doing the presentation. thank you very much. We, as from SALC, were having a team of three. It's myself, Lestadi Khale, Lerato Pasha, and Bernard. So the approach will be that I will be giving the broad overview, then for 5 minutes, and the rest of the time I'll give to Auxiliarato to go through the complete presentation or technical presentation. We as SALCA, we want to take this opportunity firstly to greet yourself, Chair, and the committee, and feel privileged that we are given this opportunity to engage with this honorable committee in relation to one of the most difficult challenges facing local government, financial sustainability and funding for our different myriad of program, including historical backlogs. It is key that as Parliament, as you pass these important bills, you are able to have a historical background of the challenges facing our local government. Historically, we know big cities and big towns has always had an opportunity to have what we call a tech space based on the development of business and other important social amenities that created the basis of a good tax rate that kept those municipalities going. But since 1995, particularly 2000, you had what we call a wall-to-wall municipal that included former Bantustan areas, small towns, and deep rural municipalities. There you had absolutely no infrastructure of any sort. And since we started then up to now, that kind of deadlock because of a lack of appropriate funding. Our recently produced document, a well-researched document, says even in big municipalities, only 60% can be used using our own revenue. That is a well-run and a well-invested medium to large city. But in rural areas, it goes way beyond the 60%. So it is key, honorable members of parliament, remembering that you also belong to our municipalities. It is key to ensure that local government infrastructure, particularly infrastructure like water, road, sanitation, electricity, is well funded in order to create an environment where investment can come in from different investors so that we stop this outflow of people from rural municipalities into cities where they end up in squalors and all other social situation occurs where there is disorder. So we want to indicate as SALCA that our presentation will try to give you a picture that says it is about time that local government is given the kind of highlight and spotlight in order to create a better society and a better South Africa for all. I'll pause there and allow Lerato to take us through the technical report. Auxiliary Lerato, you can then take us through the technical report, please, within the time stipulated by the chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to check if my video is reflecting.
If you are reflecting.
Well framed. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Chair of the Committee and honourable members of the Committee and colleagues in the meeting. My name is Lerato Pasha, the Portfolio Head responsible for Municipal Finance at SALGA. I will now share, I'm not sure if the committee is able to hear, to see the presentation. If I can just get an indication in terms of the committee being able to see the presentation, I'll flight it from my side.
We can see it.
Thank you very much. So the presentation would outline the two, these macroeconomic fiscal policy outlook and our position in terms of the DORA bill and the conclusions and the recommendations. I'd like to first praise the committee that we were consulted in the first draft of the DORA bill and the second draft of the DORA bill, which we have submitted comments from organized local government. We did receive responses from National Treasury on the first DORA bill. We were just waiting for the second comments, the outcomes in terms of the comments that we've made to the second bill. Chair, as SALGA, we acknowledge the efforts that have been made by government in terms of to sustain the fiscal sustainability by narrowing the debt deficit and stabilizing the debt. And as the National Treasury has outlined, the fiscal risks which were load shedding and the logistical challenges that the country is facing, we then have observed that these challenges will be detrimental and have negative effects to municipalities and their ability to deliver their constitutional mandate. Chair, I think in the previous select committee, we have outlined the cost that is a local government is spending in terms of the impact of load shedding on infrastructure and finances of municipalities. We are then suggesting as SALGA that the gains that government will achieve in the coming fiscal year should be redirected to local government to improve the sustainability of municipalities, particularly those that the chair have indicated in rural municipalities, because they have a limited revenue raising capacity and high infrastructure backlog. At SALGA, we recommend the implementation of the recovery strategies and investment into the economic infrastructure project that will be inclusive of local economies in municipalities. And this, we are suggesting that it should be accelerated in the short and the medium term. I would like to take note that the Select Committee had previously asked SALGA to come up with a strategy that will help with economic development, clear strategies, and clear there are programs within SALGA to address and assist government in terms of improving this economic challenge that we have. In terms of the comments, Chair, we have noted that the fiscal, the sector has been allocated 177 billion, which is an increase of 4.9 billion compared to the previous financial year. This bill constitutes, Chair, as 9.7% from the fiscus, which is something that as SALGA we've been advocated to say this is not sufficient. We are underfunded as the sector, and the chair has elaborated that we have observed through the data from that is published by National Treasury that municipalities now are only able to cover 60% of their expenditures from their own generated revenues. And we have observed, Chair, and I think it has been shared with yourself, that there are revenue challenges within these municipalities. And some of those revenue challenges are mainly outside, are some constituted by external factors such as unemployment, poverty, and the resistance from customers to pay, and also the illegal connections and theft that's currently being experienced by municipalities. We have observed, Chair, that although there are municipalities that have received added allocations to their budget. Some have been reduced, and there is a net decrease of 384 million from the conditional grants. We see this as something that is unacceptable, given the infrastructure backlog that is within municipalities. And I think with the census numbers that have come through and the non-financial information that we've received from Stats, that there is an increasing pressure on municipalities as the population is growing for them to provide basic services to their communities. We've observed that the budgeting continues to be stagnant. In some instances, it's declining, which is going to be have negative implications to the budgeting of municipalities in the medium term. We have also observed that these allocations, Chair, ignore the current realities that are being faced by municipalities as expenditures are growing faster than the revenues, either from transfers and also from internally generated revenues, which is a challenge for municipalities to meet their obligations. It is also important to note that the current allocations, as I've said, Chair, that we've observed that some municipalities have their allocations have been reduced, and some did receive additional funding. But we are highlighting that those that have been reduced, in some instances, it was not because of non-performance or non-compliance of their conditions of their grants, and this will be and it has been detrimental, and those municipalities now need to revise their projects, their planning, and also need to go back to their constituencies and their communities to tell them that they will not be able to proceed with some of the projects that were anticipated or were planned for. In terms of the smart meter grant, Chair, we welcome and appreciate the grant that has been allocated to our local government of 2 billion rand. We believe that it will go a long way in assisting municipalities, particularly with the metering challenges that are currently there and also with revenue collection. We are then making these proposals, Chair, that National Treasury should ensure that there is an end-to-end support in terms of rolling out of this project to the municipalities who they have prioritized, which just, they've indicated.
My apologies, ma'am. There's a request in the inbox that somebody has entered with the name iPhone. Can you please rename or indicate who you are so that we can be accountable for whoever is in this meeting? I'm sorry about that, ma'am. You can continue. iPhone, rename yourself.
Okay.
Or seek assistance. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And we are also proposing that the business case readiness assessment that should be done to the municipalities will be allocated this grant, and a clear framework on how municipalities will get access to this grant. And we are proposing that there should be a steering committee to support and assist with developing that framework, and SALGA should form part of that steering committee. And we do obviously support the transversal tender, which National Treasury will be managing. Our concerns with the smart meter grant, Chair, is we have realized that it was money that was reprioritized from MIG and INEP, and this shifting is troublesome to local government, because we know that those grants are equally important, especially in elevating and bridging the backlogs, infrastructure backlogs that is currently there. We also have noted that these the municipalities where this money was reprioritized are not necessarily the ones that are going to be reallocated the smart meter grant, which we think is not equitable, and they will not be able to also share. Hence, we are then extending that this grant of the smart meter should be available to all municipalities. We welcome, in terms of the infrastructure reforms, we welcome the initiative to government's reforms to reduce waste and improve quality of public investment. We also welcome the establishment of the infrastructure and implementation support agency that will cut across all the spheres of government. As local government, we are still requesting that there should be a review of local government's fiscal framework, particularly the refinements to the equitable share formula. At SALGA, we are also welcoming the proposed review of capacity building systems to improve administration and programs, rationalizing this capacity building grants. We see this to improve the capacity and the skills that are needed within the sector to improve on performance within municipalities. We also welcome the measures to improve the efficiency of the urban utility reforms, but we are then proposing here that it should not be limited to metros, but also be extended to secondary cities. At SALGA, we are concerned with the horizontal budget allocations to municipalities, particularly those municipalities that are on the borders of the country, as they are experiencing infrastructure and service delivery constraints due to these uncontrolled and illegal immigration. Chair, we have shared with the committee that SALGA had embarked on a study to look into the review of the fiscal framework. We have finalized our study, and these are some of the key findings that have come through, that the sector needs 150 billion per year to meet its mandate of service delivery. We have observed that as the sector, we should be allocated up to a maximum of 18.8%, as opposed to the 9.7% that we're currently receiving. We have observed the findings have outlined that there is constrained expenditures of 98 billion. This means, Chair, that this is expenditures that we should be spending as a sector, but because we don't have the sufficient funds from our own revenues and also from the fiscus, we are unable to spend this much. And this is also further increasing this backlog of infrastructure that's currently existing in local government. The findings has also shared that there is some inefficiencies that are currently happening within the sector, and as a sector, we need to improve in measures of reducing debt impairment, fruitless and wasteful expenditures, and others that have been indicated in the report, and we could potentially save 92 billion per year as the sector in terms of improving on in those areas. Chair, there is currently this problem that has been being faced by the sector for a number of years of underfunded and unfunded mandates, which the is costing the municipalities up to 31 billion rand. And we are then, for Chair, saying that the departments that are responsible to ensure that this matter is resolved come and sit at the table to resolve this matter, because this money could be reallocated to other pressing needs of local government. Chair, in terms of the conclusions, as we have said, we are acknowledging the stabilizing of debt and narrowing of the deficit. We, however, do not welcome the decreases in terms of the conditional grants that of 384. We do welcome the smart meter grant, but we are then proposing that it should be expanded to all the municipalities, and support should be provided to those municipalities. We welcome all the reforms to fast-track spending and infrastructure, and we also welcome the review of the equitable share formula and the reforms to supplement own revenues of municipalities. We are recommending, Chair, that any fiscal gains that government achieves, it should be redirected to local government to improve the financial sustainability, which is currently a challenge at the moment. And National Treasury should expedite the review of the local government fiscal framework and consider the outcomes from our study, and then the Joint Standing Committee and the Select Committee on Appropriation to take note and escalate the preliminary findings of our study. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tim Salga. You were on time as requested. I will now request the PBO, which will be led by Dr. Janches. You are given 1 hour, 10 minutes. I've seen your presentation is too long, but please just be mindful. As I've raised before, that we have a series of meetings that we need to process or attend. Over to you, Dr.
Thank you so much, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of all the three spheres of government. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm with the team, Chair. We'll quickly try to be conscious of time, but really thank the opportunity you gave us and the time as well. We look at all these three bills at once, to look at the DORA, the second adjustment, and also the GFREC as well. So I'll give a bit of background, then I'll come in later, I'll give the team to take us through the presentation, or do run through the presentation. We'll answer some of the points during the questions time. This is a presentation outline that we have for today. Next slide. I think I'll just quickly run through the introduction and the background, and just give also our projections on some of the issues that we've highlighted. As mentioned at the beginning, the presentation does look at these three bills that are in place in front of the committee. The background will try to provide some of the key functional responsibilities of these spheres, but also highlight some of the key issues around understanding around the revenue raising, and also and provide a very high level of projections that we've made in regards to how we see the budget impacting the macroeconomic outcomes over the medium term, which members will also reflect on that in line with the National Development Plan. The discussion will provide more detailed insight into the discussions, the bills, and some of the areas that we feel the committee has considered in the debate and discussion going forward. Next slide. I think just to give context, the slide has not moved. Next slide. So just to give context on the presentation itself, we do recognize that who's moving the slides, colleagues? Is it me or they have not moved? Mapula? Okay, it does not move. I'll just move along.
They move from my side.
Oh, is it only me seeing the same slide? Chairperson, can you see the different slide or is it just me?
I can see the slide, the introduction.
Yeah, it has not moved. Yes, all right. Mapula, can you try to move it? It has not moved.
Can they give you the hosting right, Doctor? You can also move from your side. I don't know. Mapula, are you struggling with the...
Okay, so are you able to move the slide?
Lubabalo can also help.
Please, Lubabalo, help us. Let me just move on because members have got the. All right. Excellent. Thank you so much. The next slide. I think the next slide will do show that, remind members and members that the national provincial government has some of the concurrent functions, visibility. I'm saying, given this context of division of revenue, just as a refresher, remind us members that are key functions that are concurrent with between the national and the provincial spheres, with national providing largely leadership and really providing policy direction in these matters. And also, of course, importantly to notice the important role of oversight and monitoring by the national sphere. But also now, you realize that provincial government's main role is to implement these policy provisions from a national perspective. And of course, national has some of the functions that are centralized within the national sphere, and those also hence you see budget being allocated or division of revenue also are impacting quite a lot on national as well. Next slide. And the provincial and the local government receives several shares in terms of the division of revenue, but also there are conditional grants that enables the functions of these spheres to deal with those specific functions in particular. The defence sharing provides executive shares to province and local government to enable them to meet these basic obligation services and also provide additional funding through the crucial grants there. The next slide. In this slide also, it's important to understand that national government has a main capacity to really raise a lot of revenue. You remember the different mechanisms are used. So a large part of the revenue is raised to the national sphere, and hence it has to be divided among the three spheres, which have limited capacity in terms of how they are able to raise capacity of revenue. And I listened to the colleagues from the SALGA, which are raising an important point about the capacity of the local government to raise revenue. It's important to take that into account as well. Again, the ARDO's responsibility, the sphere, and you know that provinces have a limited capacity in terms of revenue, hence they get quite a lot of, yet they've got quite high spending responsibilities in lines of functions, education and health, and so many of them. But all this has come out of this nationally raised revenue in particular. And of course, local government are definitely worth discussion around how municipalities revenue, because the expectation is quite high that local government should be able to raise own revenue as part of the broader revenue, budget revenue in this regard. We'll see later in the presentation we'll show if the local government raises revenue, how much has impact the budget as a whole. And next slide, I think I'll move to the next slide. I think in this slide, quick slide overview, I think what we're saying here, you remember, Chair and members, that in our presentation on the fiscal framework on 27th of February, we provided a status of to the progress that has been done in realizing the national development targets, including looking at the level of economic growth, unemployment, poverty, and inequality. And I think we look back and we did raise concerns about to be taken into account by Parliament in this regard and the slow progress on some of the achievements, some of the matters, the targets that are set out. We further raised concerns that our concerns that the current budget proposals are unlikely to lead to better progress in realizing some of these targets. So more is to be done in that regard. So today in these two slides following each other now, we look forward now in this regard. We provide members with our projections in medium-term projections in terms of how we expect the budget to impact some of these targets in particular. We start by looking at the economic growth outlook, and our projections are compared with those of National Treasury and Reserve Bank. And our concern is the projection shows that the GDP growth outlook based on the current budget proposals over the medium term is significantly below that is required by National Development Plan, which is 5.5%, and are inadequate to tackle some of the desired unemployment and poverty and some of these challenges that require more demand, greater demand in the economy. There is insufficient support for economic development are concerned. There is support for economic development in the budget, but we are saying it is insufficient given the clear demand investment likely to remain low within the economy in this regard over the medium term. The South African economy remains extremely concentrated are concerns and highly centralized. Their structural transformation, our view, will be more important as a driving force to get us into the new economic just path over the medium term. Budget could contribute towards achieving inclusive economic growth and fiscal stability by directing more resources towards struggling poor households, public service, and infrastructure development in pursuit for new demand-led growth trajectory. You see, those are the comparative our growth outlook does look slightly lower for that of National Treasury and that of Reserve Bank. Next slide. And the last slide, in this last slide, Chair, in this background, it does, we saw our presentation on 27 remains way of, we do say that unemployment, poverty, and inequality remains quite way off the national development targets, and this certain instances are, in some instances, is going to be worse also off. The next slide, I think you went too fast. The previous slide, yes. No, yes, I'm on the last slide before I give to you to continue. So I think in this slide, we're just trying to show our projections for unemployment, poverty, and inequality over time, taking into account the budget based on the 24 budget based on proposals, which includes this deficit revenue and some of these adjustments, of course. So what we're showing that unemployment is projected in our projections to come out slightly lower than where we are, better than where we are currently, around 30% over the midterm. Yet we can see 32.4% when we looked at it last month.
which, you know, by 2026, we're expecting this to be remaining at 30%, which is slightly better than where we are now. However, still far below what we expected to be in terms of NDP. And by that time, it would be 4 years before the NDP period as well. And also look at inequality, income inequality, expected to see the same 2.4 points there, which is slightly better than where we are now, yet still lower than what we expect in national development plan. The poverty will remain quite high over the medium term, and more so that it's also quite far higher than what we expected in NDP. These projections do show that more intervention is required in terms of the economy if we are going to realize or speed up the realization of this targeted plan. So I think the purpose of showing these is really to give members to think about what else has to be done. I'll come in later with some of the conclusion after the colleagues come in, Chair. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm giving other colleagues to come in as well. Colleagues, do you want to come in?
Thank you, Dr. Yankees.
Who's coming? Let's look.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Yankees. Apologies for the technical difficulties. I'm just going to ask my colleague, Mabula, to share the slide.
Is it possible for Mabula to share for us? I do apologize, Chairperson, about the glitches. Is it possible for Mabula to share the slides for us? Oh, there we go. Perfect.
Thank you, members, and thank you to other stakeholders on the platform for allowing us the opportunity to take you through the presentation. Mapula, can you do presentation mode? Thank you. The 2020s can be viewed as a period that has been overwhelmed by crisis. We have the COVID-19 pandemic, climate change shocks, and other cost of living crisis that negatively impacted households. Underpinning the cost of living crisis in South Africa is an economy that continues to suffer from unemployment, inequality, and pervasive poverty. Can you move on the next slide? I'll take these points there. Next slide, please. The annual average cost of household food basket increased by 64% from 3,103 in 2019 to 5,098 in 2023. The average cost of a household food basket is above the 2023 average national minimum wage of general workers, which is 3,993 in real terms, and the average monthly social grants for 2024-2025. Social grants have been an essential safety net for many poor households and individuals. In the 2024 budget, the National Treasury has allocated 33.6 billion rand for the COVID-19 SRD grant for 2024-2025 fiscal year. There's a decrease from the 36.1 billion rand allocated in 2023-2024, as well as the revised estimates. Grant of 350 rand, which is now 370 rand, as announced by the Minister of Finance over a week ago, that will be received by beneficiaries, falls short of the inflation-adjusted national poverty line, which stands at 760 rand per person per month. Next slide, please. Amid extremely high levels of poverty, inequality, and unemployment, grants have supported the livelihoods of the most vulnerable. According to StatsSA, after salaries, grants were the second most important source of income for households in 2022. I'll take the point in the next slide, please. Next slide, please. With a high number of people experience hunger increasing from 6.5 million rand in 2018 to 7.8 million in 2022, social grants have contributed to improving food security for millions of poor individuals. It is worth noting that the right of access to sufficient food is a constitutionally entrenched socioeconomic right. The government social security system remains a vital intervention to fight the effects of poverty and increase economic activity. In budget 2024, the continuation of the COVID-19 SRD grant, which supports between 7.5 to 9 million people monthly remains to be determined beyond the 2024-2025 fiscal year. This uncertainty raises concern as the grant represents a key component of the country's poverty alleviation strategy. Next slide, please. The extreme level of structural unemployment and inequality has depleted the resilience of the majority of the population. Notably, South Africa's average annual unemployment rate increased from 27.1% in 2018 to 32.4% in 2023. A closer analysis of the quarterly figures shows that in the fourth quarter of 2023, unemployment had reached 32.1%. Furthermore, the number of individuals with tertiary qualifications who were unemployed increased from 724,894 in the third quarter of 2023 to 726,804 in the fourth quarter of 2023, marking a 0.3% increase. Due to its obscenely high rate, youth unemployment is often described as a ticking time bomb in South Africa. In the fourth quarter of 2023, the youth unemployment rate grew from 43.4% in the third quarter to 44.3%. This translates to 4.7 million unemployed youth. The escalation underscores an urgent need for effective intervention. One of the measures that could be implemented includes the introduction of a basic income grant, which instills a level of income certainty and empowers young people to plan over the long term. South Africa had a 6% increase in violent crime between 2018 and 2022. In the crime contact category, murder and attempted murder increased by more than 30% between the two periods. A close examination of the latest quarterly figures shows that, on average, crime increased by 2.7% between the third quarter of 2022 and the third quarter of 2023. Police Minister Bekkie has previously expressed concern regarding the targeted killings of law enforcement officers and high levels of gender-based violence within the country. The latest ratio of police officers to the population is one police officer, excluding administrative staff, to every 417 citizens. In the budget 2024, 350 million rand has been allocated to police and defense to support the upcoming elections. In addition, 10,000 new police recruits will be trained in the next financial year. However, the 2024 budget did not address the specific allocation for the implementation of the new strategic plan on gender-based violence and femicide. This highlights the gap in the targeted funding for this important issue. Next slide, please. Inequality in access and quality of education is an important contributing factor to inequality in South Africa. The disparity in educational opportunities is evident at all levels of education, but it's especially evident during the transition to tertiary education. Although notable progress has been made in broadening access to education, intense disparities still exist. According to StatsSA, enrollment at higher education institutions for persons aged 18 to 29 was most common among Indian and Asian population group and white and population group, as shown by the graph on the right in 2022. By comparison, 5.2% of colored population and 5.5% of the black population group were enrolled in institutions of higher learning. In the 2024 budget, 480.6 billion rand has been earmarked for the learning and education function, of which 30% of this function, of this funding rather, is directed towards post-education and training. Reflecting the high demand of educational support, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, NASFAS, received now more than 1.9 million applications by February 2024, underscoring the need for financial support amongst prospective students. Next slide, please. Next slide, please.
Mapula. I am only. Next slide. It seems like there is a lag between me and everything.
Yes, Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to assist, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. We're on slide 19.
Chairperson, I'm going to take your take away your host rights so that I can be able to share my screen from this side.
Okay, so continue because members got the presentation in the meantime. Can you continue for the sake of time?
Okay. Okay. So the slide that will be presented is slide 19. It's on the provisional sphere of government, the provision of education. The recent data from Statista highlights a concerning trend in South Africa's education sector. The percentage of individuals who attended primary or secondary school decreased from 87.7% in 2018 to 86.8% in 2022. This trend poses concern as the battle to strengthen the outcomes of the country's education system is usually lost or won at primary school. The current budget allocation is concerning for education outcomes, notably for the larger sizes in public schools. On average, South Africa's public schools have a 1 to 31 learner to educator ratio compared to the 1 to 16 ratio found in private schools. South Africa's learner to educator ratio is higher than OECD countries, which averages at around 15 students for every teacher in primary school. The learner to educator ratio are expected to increase in a budget-constrained environment and an aging teacher workforce. In budget 2024, the basic education function is set to receive 324.5 billion rand in nominal terms. This allocation marks a 3.4% nominal increase from the previous year's 213.7 billion rand. However, when adjusted for the projected CPI inflation of 4.9% for 2024, the real value of the budget allocation for basic education adjusts to 309.4 billion rand. Next slide, please. I'll take this on the next slide. Next slide, please. Okay. In this slide, our goal is to present the current state of the public health workforce using the most recent data and information available to us. The table shows a study conducted by the Department of Health, which revealed that there's a shortage of healthcare workers in South Africa. Specifically, there is a total of 43 doctors per 100,000 population and 282 nurses per 100,000 population in 2019. The shortage underscores the need for increased investment in human resource and infrastructure in the healthcare sector. The bar graph on the right is an analysis that was conducted by Motlhabo Matseke on the number of healthcare workers that were registered versus those that were employed in the public sector. As of the 1st of April 2020, the Health Professions Council of South Africa had registered a total of 43,901 medical practitioners. Of this, 28,926, which is about 48%, were working in the public health sector. There were 285,245 registered nursing practitioners, with 143,288 of them working in the public health sector. In a country where public health is understaffed and public health facilities are overcrowded, the Health Minister Joel Pasha's recent revelation that 604 newly qualified medical doctors remain unemployed since qualifying is concerning. In budget 2024, National Treasury allocated 271.9 billion rand towards the health function in 2024-25. However, in real value, the budget allocation to the health function amounts to 259.3 billion rand. The continued fiscal consolidation trend can be seen by the reduction in real per capita spending over the health function over the MTF period. Next slide, please. Local government is the sphere of government closest to people and has an important role in providing basic services to the communities. The provision of municipal service is not only an important building block towards achieving inclusive, sustainable, and developmental goals, but it's an effective form of public intervention to promote economic growth. Government has made significant progress in providing households with access to basic services. However, despite the progress made, the provision of quality service has been slow, and in some instances, it has deteriorated due to several factors, including underinvestment in infrastructure maintenance. The National Treasury's 2022 State of Local Government Finance report found that 169, which is about 66%, of municipalities were in financial distress at the end of 2021-2022. According to the Auditor General report, only 38 out of 257 municipalities, which equates to about 15%, achieved clean audits in 2021-2022. The figure above shows that the number of people who do not have access to water, sanitation facilities, and refuse disposal has increased between 2018 and 2022. The number of people who do not have access to electricity decreased over the same period. Next slide, please. The policy approach to basic services since 1994 has been that government funded the capital cost of new service infrastructure while users covered operational and maintenance costs. However, this approach proved untenable because it was clear that poverty, unemployment, and high running costs meant that poor people could not afford the charges for services. Therefore, in 2001, South Africa adopted the free basic service policy intended for the provision of free basic services to poor households. However, millions of households eligible for free basic services such as electricity do not receive these services due to the onerous registration process, amongst other factors. Honourable members, what studies have found is that households not registered by municipality cannot obtain any free service regardless of how poor they are. The effective result is that a household's ability to access free basic services is determined by where they live rather than their poverty level. In addition, municipalities have the sole discretion to determine which households qualify for to receive free basic services. However, there are variations in the qualifying criteria. In 2018, our calculation shows that only 3.2 million households out of 10 million poor households were able to receive free electricity. The figure above shows that fewer households are receiving free basic services in 2021. In addition, the free services that are available to households are generally insufficient to meet their basic needs. I'll hand over to my next colleague. Thank you.
Thank you. Next slide, please. So members, the Division of Revenue Bill provides for the equitable division of nationally raised revenue between the three spheres of government. The diagrams below show the actual outcomes in 2021 and 2022-23, as well as the estimates for 2023-24 and 24-25. As previously also noted, government aims to increase the proportions of transfers to the provincial and local spheres of government, but outcomes are always slightly lower. The division of the 2024-25 revenue is 48.5% for the national sphere of government. Provinces receive 41.7%, and on a local level, it's only 9.7%. Next slide. Members, you are familiar with this slide, and it is just a reminder that reallocation of funds is primarily from equitable shares and conditional grants in the Community and Economic Development Function Groups towards other function groups, mainly for compensation of employees. Next slide. In terms of the appropriations, on a national level, departments are estimating to spend 31.3% on current items and estimate to transfer 67.9%. In 2024-25, two amounts are allocated towards financial transactions in assets and liabilities. The 850 million in treasury is to purchase equity in the African Development Bank, and the 204 million is towards civil aviation. The last column shows the percentage change from the current financial year, and the biggest changes there are reduction in public works and infrastructure of minus 13.3%. Biggest increases are in terms of communication and digital technology, a 13% increase from last year to this year, or from 2023 to 24. The biggest reduction is in mineral resources and energy of minus 17%. Next slide. Members, changes to conditional grants transferred from national departments from the current financial year to the 24-25 financial year are shown in the yellow column. The biggest reduction of 22.8% and 25.2% is in public works and infrastructure for provincial and local government conditional grants. The biggest increase of 20.4% is towards local government from the Department of Transport. Next slide. Members, in terms of the equitable share, the average annual growth in provincial equitable share over the 2024 medium term is 3.9%, versus the previous estimate of 3.3% over the medium term. The increase from 2023 to 24 is, however, only 2.6%. In addition to the provincial equitable share, the provinces receive conditional grants amounting to 129 billion, which brings the total allocation to 729 billion in 2024-25. Next slide. Specific changes to provincial allocations are the shifting of maintenance and subsidy for nutritional support portion of the ECD grant to the national department. Funds for the health human resource and training grant are shifted to the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape and Northwest, meaning that other provinces must cut on the training of health science professionals, including specialists, registrars, their supervisors, internships and community service posts. The human settlements, development and informal settlements upgrading partnership grants also decline over the 2024 medium term. Next slide. Members, an interesting inclusion in the 2024 budget review is the illustration of the change of the division of revenue when own revenue raised by local government is included in the year that they've used is 2022-23. The result is local government share changed to 28% of the total government revenue versus the 8.7% without the municipal revenue. Next slide. Allocations to local government decreased by 20.6 billion over the medium term. Direct transfers decreased by 13.5 billion over the medium term, of which 9.6 billion is from the equitable share and 3.9 billion from the conditional grant. Some of the reprioritizations of the medium term period include reductions in the EPWP program and 1.7 billion from the municipal infrastructure grant is shifted to the Municipal Disaster Recovery Grant. 5.6 billion of the Integrated National Electrification Program is reprioritized to fund other priorities in the energy sector. Next slide. Next. Members, just to illustrate that spending on a provincial government level for the current financial year was already at 75.3% at the end of December 2023. And just also to remind you that this sphere of government is almost totally dependent on transfers from the National Revenue Fund and national departments. Next slide. Members, just a few points on inefficiencies after observing what government is planning to do and what has been done to address this phenomenon. In terms of the rationalization of entities, government is anticipating to reduce the number of provincial and national entities by 7. From 281 to 264. Not sure by when this will be finalized. Despite the efforts to rationalize this sphere of government, government also plans to increase the number of public entities. For example, the creation of the National Health Insurance Fund, the possibility of creating an independent holding company to manage state-owned entities, and the proposed South African National Petroleum Company. Members, the personnel numbers on a national level is estimated to reach a total of 403,350 in 2024-25, and the entities linked to national departments estimate to reach a total of 264,592, which is an additional 66% of the national numbers. The concern is not just about rationalization, but also to standardize levels, specifically on the executive management level. For example, the 9 top management positions in SAA earn 5.2 million a year, whereas the management positions in the South African Forestry Company earns 2.5 million on average. Poor coordination between different programs within departments or between departments and between departments are observed. For example, the continuous underspending on agriculture conditional grants, specifically projects that are created to support beneficiaries of land reform. The question is how this slow spending influenced the success of land reform. In the 2024 budget, an amount of 7.4 billion is set aside for the presidential employment initiatives, of which 750 million is reprioritized towards the food security and livelihoods program, which provides subsistence farmers with vouchers to purchase agricultural inputs, while the ILEMA grant for the same purpose continuously underspent. About 4 billion will be made available for hiring more teacher assistants through the Basic Education School Employment Initiative in provinces. This is not reflected in the 2024 DORA list of allocations outside of the equitable share formula as previously. Therefore, no evidence of this in the budget, and there are indications that job losses in 2023 could be linked to the end of contracts within the Presidential Employment Initiative. Next slide. An amount of 1.1 billion is reprioritized from special economic zones towards the Social Employment Fund that was created for the Presidential Employment Stimulus and administered by the IDC, which also uses 40 strategic partners or NPOs to promote work in local communities. This makes one think whether evidence is available that the specific fund is more efficient and effective than the EPWP program. 400 million has also been taken away from the Community Works program. Is this also because of inefficiencies? The city's public employment program will receive 650 million to create employment in local communities and townships to assist with upgrading of informal settlements, developing township economies, conducting maintenance, and developing and managing public spaces and assets. The question is whether this is now a trade-off with the informal settlement upgrading partnership grant that has been reduced, or is it a duplication? The National Youth Service will receive 250 million to support youth employment initiatives. The National Pathway Management Network, which is a network of networks connecting all existing networks serving unemployed young people, will receive 250 million to help connect unemployed people to job opportunities. The perception is that the maintenance of a database for job opportunities is the responsibility of the Department of Employment and Labour. In addition to the above, it is also noted that the allocation for the university subsidies, presidential youth employment intervention, spending item in higher education and training has more than doubled in 2024 from 2023-24, and it is not clear whether this reprioritization is also from the original Presidential Employment Initiative funding, but for a different purpose. Lastly, members, we did a brief on skills development and training in an effort to get an indication of support for employment, and none of the above entities came up in our search. So the question is, how many other institutions receive funding for skills development and job creation without making a difference to our unemployment rate? Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. I will take you through the real per capita analysis that we conducted. Per capita analysis essentially is used per person analysis of the budget. I will take you through the per capita analysis of the social wage, per function group, as well as per economic classification. Basically, the National Treasury said that the social wage will constitute an average of 16.2% of the total non-interest spending over the next 3 years. This amount is lower, than the 61% that was projected in the 2023 medium-term budget policy statement. So the PBA suggests that the government has not accounted for the effects of inflation and population when allocating funds for such social programs, and this could essentially lead to challenges in adequately funding, providing essential services and support to the population. Next slide, please. In this slide, we show the per capita spending by function group. You will see that the per capita expenditure declines to 22,262 in 2026-2027 financial year. This is lower. The revised estimate is lower than the real capita spend in 2016-17 estimate, which is at 23,116. So in 2023-2024 financial year, total real per capita spend has been revised to 22,917, which is an upward revision from what we saw in the medium-term budget policy statement. And it also declines from the projected 22,964 in the 2022 medium-term budget policy statement, as well as the 23,402 in the budget 2023. The effects of fiscal consolidation has caused reductions in real per capita expenditure on key areas such as health, education, and other critical sectors of society, of which the majority of the population rely on such public services. So this is a matter of concern. Next slide, please. In this slide, we show the real per capita spending by economic classification. You will see that in 16-17, from the table below, total real expenditure was at 25,721. So in 2023, medium-term budget policy statement, it was projected that total real expenditure per capita for 2026-2027 financial year will increase to 26,758. The 2024 budget projection is slightly higher, which comes at around 26,836. In the 2023-2024 financial year, total real per capita spending is revised upwards to 27,184 from the MTBP figure of 27,097 rand. So the transfers to and subsidy to household are the main cons which will decline in real terms through the medium term because of the projected discontinuation of the SRD grant. Next slide, please. In this slide, we pay particular attention to the health department. The National Treasury is of the view that the national budget will grow lower than inflation over the MTF period due to the 23.7 billion baseline reductions over that period. So total real per capita expenditure on health declined in the medium term. In 2016-17, government spent around 3,133 per person. So the projected spending per person in 2016-27 is going to be only 3,067 rand in real per capita. So you can see the difference there. In 2016, it was 3,133. So through this baseline reduction and the policies that the government is implementing, this will result in lower expenditure per person. So without real increases in the funding of health, the healthcare system in South Africa will continue to remain overstretched, highly inequal, and severely underfunded, as we've seen with the recent issues around the lack of absorbing of qualified doctors. So this is a cause of concern. Next slide, please. On this slide, we focus on the education sector, Pelena. So you'll see that in the 2023 medium-term budget policy statement, it was allocated less expenditure per student than in 25-26 financially. So real per capita Pelena expenditure on basic education is now projected to increase over the medium term. The 2024 budget spending per learner is now projected to be around 17,304 in real term, which is lower than the 2023-2024 value of 17,591. Spending on ECD, on early child development grant, increases by 24.5% in real terms over the medium term, which is a positive development because nearly 1.1 million children from the ages 3 to 5 do not have access to any form of early child learning development. So this a significant increase will go a long way to address some of those issues. The 2024 budget has caused inflationary cuts to subsidies of schools in the medium term. So the projected average annual is zero. It means that over time in the MTF, there's no real increases in allocation to schools, which is a concern. Next slide, please. On this slide, we put special focus on the COVID-19 SRD grant. This grant was introduced during COVID, but it has never been adjusted for inflation. So the buying power currently of this grant is now at 286. So the minister did make an announcement that they're only going to increase it by 20 rand from the 1st of April this year. So, but you can still see that it will still be below inflation. So after the grant has been inadequate and budgeted, continually been adjusted downward. The PBO has continually highlighted this issue that government exclusion criteria excludes between 3.1 and 3.9 million people from the Department of Social Development identified target of 10.9 million who should be receiving this grant. You recall as well that in 2020, in the budget 2022, 44 billion was allocated to 33.9 billion. Is higher than that of 2025, which is 33.7 billion. But the issue is that at the same time, if you read through in the budget review, you will notice that they said number of beneficiaries of this grant is expected to increase from 9.02 million to 9.24 million. But then the question remains, why are the allocations declining while the number of beneficiaries increases. So these are some of the questions that need to be posed to National Treasury as well as the Department of Social Development. Thank you. I will hand over to Siraj. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I hope you can hear you. I'm going to take you through the Chief Secretary Defrayo Amendment Bill. The amendment to the Jefekra Bill provides for direct charges against the NRF for the contingency reserve account of the South African Reserve Bank, but and it also provides for a reporting of such funds informed by a new settlement agreement between the Minister of Finance and the South African Reserve Board Governor. So what I'm going to go through is sort of looking at the background to Jefekra and the new arrangement. The government's foreign exchange reserves can be thought of as a form of self-insurance against instability, financial crisis, and contagion that may harm the South African economy, particularly the financial sector and other businesses. South Africa maintains open financial accounts and a floating exchange rate, which means that we are vulnerable to sudden shifts in sentiment in global financial and exchange rate markets, including panic and herding behavior. The GFECRA can therefore be thought of as a service that the South African government through the South African Reserve Bank provides to the economy, particularly the financial services sector. GFECRA was established in terms of the South African Reserve Bank Act 1989, Act Number 90 of 1989, to manage the account on behalf of the National Treasury. Next slide, please. Sections 25 to 27 of the Reserve Bank Act provide for the management by the South African Reserve Bank of a gold price adjustment account, a foreign exchange adjustment account, and a forward exchange contracts adjustment account. The Act allows the Minister of Finance and the Governor of the South African Reserve Bank to settle positive balances in the GFECRA by mutual agreement. When there's a debit balance in GFECRA, it counts as a loss to the government, which is paid to the account from the National Revenue Fund. If the minister and governor agree, a credit balance on GFECRA would be paid into the National Revenue Fund. The government and the SARB have reached an agreement on a new framework for managing GFECRA that will require an amendment to the 2003 GFECRA Settlement Act. Next slide, please. So the proposal in the 2024 budget, the 2024 budget includes a proposal to withdraw 150 billion from the GFECRA to lower government's borrowing requirements over the MTF. And they also add 100 billion that would go towards the expenses and costs of the Reserve Bank. So the total would be 250 billion. 100 billion of the 150 billion will be allocated in the fiscal year 2024-25 with an additional 25 billion earmarked for each of the subsequent fiscal years 25-26 and 26-27. Concerns have been raised that the government is drawing on unrealized gains in the GFECRA account to reduce its debt. The National Treasury and the SARB have explained that even after the 250 billion is withdrawn from GFECRA and converted into realized gains by the Reserve Bank, that the size of South Africa's foreign exchange reserves will be large enough to ensure adequate reserves in the case of unforeseen events. GFECRA has operated in a way where growth into the account went unsettled. The National Treasury and SARB have agreed to a new framework for distributing the GFECRA balances into what they call a waterfall arrangement into three pools. The three pools are a GFECRA buffer pool large enough to ensure that the funds in the account will always be positive, a SARB contingency reserve as a buffer to the SARB and to cover interest payments, and the remaining funds will be paid to the National Treasury on an annual basis. So these, by as a waterfall, you also see that there's a hierarchy of importance within these. A GFECRA buffer pool has to be large enough to ensure that the funds in the account will always be positive and seems to be set at 250 billion at present. The SARB's contingency reserves acts as a buffer to the SARB and to cover interest payments. However, this GFECRA reform affects our foreign currency reserves, our finance. It is a concern that the SARB has decided not to sell foreign exchange reserves to finance the distribution to the National Treasury, but to finance these funds with new SARB liabilities, mainly in the form of bank reserves. So I think this is an important point because people are worried that the reserve is actually going to be smaller, but they're not going to be selling off part of the reserves to transfer this money to National Treasury, but they're going to the private banking system. So part of the GFECRA funds flowing to the second pool will be used to pay interest to the banks in the financial sector. The reserves deposited at the SARB by the banks are going to be remunerated at the policy rate. Remaining funds will be paid to the National Treasury on an annual basis, while the initial payments of $150 billion and over the next 3 years, while the initial payments will be $150 billion, we can't expect subsequent payments into this final pool to be much higher or to be more than zero over a number of years and possibly lower because it took about 2 decades to build up the $500 billion reserve. Next slide, please. So some concerns with the GFECRA arrangement. By holding large levels of foreign exchange, the government provides a free service to the entire economy from which the banks and financial sector gain disproportionately huge benefits. Therefore, the PBO is concerned that the SARB has chosen to pay for the transfer to the NT by increasing reserves of banks and financial institutions that will be remunerated at a relatively high policy interest rate. The PBO views the use of GFECRA as a positive step as it illustrates the government's ability to utilize the entire public sector balance sheet to generate fiscal space. However, we are concerned that the NT and SARB's use of GFECRA does not indicate a move to consider the broader balance sheet to deal with the current unemployment, poverty, and inequality crisis and is negative on development and growth prospects. The current framework actually will create more constraints on the government's accessing GFECRA to deal with other emergencies. The PBO is also concerned with the use of the funds. We don't think it should solely be used or earmarked for debt reduction. Instead, it should be strategically allocated to finance a targeted fiscal stimulus for the economy to reduce suffering related to high levels of poverty and to support the developmental approach that will increase growth and future revenue. Next slide, please. Okay, I pass on to my colleague, Sitham Biso. Thank you.
Thank you, Suraj. Good morning to you all. I would like to give you a brief breakdown of the second adjustment appropriation bill. The second adjustment appropriation bill includes the reallocation of $470 million, meaning the total addition of $470 million with a similar size reduction. Now, the allocation to the Department of Cooperative Government has been adjusted downward by $400 million. Due to a contract not being finalized on time with a new implementing agency for the Community Works Program. Department of Home Affairs has received $200 million to increase the political party funding. Next slide, please. Thank you. The Department of International Relations and Cooperation has been allocated an additional of $80 million for hosting of the BRICS Summit in 2023-2024. The public works and infrastructure allocation have been adjusted downward by $70 million due to underspending. The funding will be shifted to the presidency for the Minister of Electricity and E-Cabinet System. Next slide, please. Thank you. $25 million has been allocated to cover the 2023-2024 public service wage agreement increases for justice and constitutional development and the Office of the Chief Justice for Court Service, the NDA, and the Judicial Education and Support. Thank you. I'm now handing over to Dr. Yangis for conclusion.
Thank you so much, colleagues. Chairperson, members, and colleagues, I think what we're emphasizing here is remind members that this is how the divisional revenue allocates the share must these spheres for the current for the next financial year. But also important to recognize the aim to increase the proportion that is transferred to local government, provincial government sphere in particular. But also we do emphasize short members when looking forward in our projections, we are concerned that the GDP outlook over the medium term significantly still lower than what we require to get to tackle some of the challenges we have in our society. But also further shows that the unemployment, poverty, and inequality really underscores the inadequacy of appropriations for social support to the vulnerable society, but and likelihood that government will not achieve these targets set out in the National Development Plan. Repatriation of funds are being implemented primarily for Excel shares, inclusion of grants in the community and economic development functions towards other group functional groups and compensation of employees there. Over the medium term, from a government stated priorities to enhance spending quality and minimize the emission treatment systems over the medium term. Next slide. I think also despite the priorities of minimizing efficiencies, some of the reprioritizations of the funding shows little evidence of enhancing spending quality. We are concerned about that. Given the changes to the functions budget for the 2024 MTF and decline in real per capita spending, we are concerned about the government's performance to achieve the national development targets as set out in the medium term strategic framework, and also within the plan over the next 6 years or so. Despite several initiatives to enhance government's own capacity to ensure effective service delivery and special delivery on infrastructure, and several challenges have also been identified by some government entities, particularly DPME, on how we're able to deal this. Well, some of the challenges leading to slow service delivery, inefficiencies and productivity, the lack of horizontal vertical integration of the structure, instability on the and leadership of government entities, slow implementation of cabinet decisions, the pace of repurposing of the public entities, a weakness within the state procurement system, a government spending is failing to stimulate economic growth. Some of the challenges are set out that might require committee and parliament to consider in terms of how to provide oversight over government entities. The next slide, last slide. And in the last slide, we do raise questions, you know, which again takes, I wish the committee to take these forward into discussion. The question remains if the fiscal policy and allocation of funds to reparations and revenue bills do not result in the outcome researching NDP, what then is required to be done? It's a question I put out there as a provocative question, but also require members to provide oversight in this regard. We raise concerns, recognize the use of GFREC as a positive step that illustrates government's ability to be calling for this over time, that government should be able to use its own public finance, public sector budget, balance sheet to really create fiscal space. However, our view is that this should be used widely as a strategic fiscal strategy to really deal with economic growth and development in this regard. We're concerned that as it is now, the banks and financial institutions will be remunerated at a higher policy interest rate because of the Reserve Bank has decided not to serve foreign exchange reserves to finance the distribution to NDP, but it's financing these funds within the liabilities of the monetary authority, mainly form of the banks and reserves in this regard. Chair and members, we really want to thank you so much for the opportunity, and we're ready to provide any further clarification questions. Thank you so much. Thanks, colleagues. Take it back to you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Team PBO. Thank you very much for the presentation. I will now request members who wants to engage in those presentations to raise their hands. Honorable Ryder, who is in the waiting room?
No, Chair, it's purely a management issue. These people call the iPhone and whatever, don't want to identify themselves. I think they should just be stuck in the waiting room, and then that makes the problem theirs. That's merely what my comment was, but my hand is up for questions as well.
Okay. I thought the Secretariat have done so, because usually we really kick them out of the system if they don't want to identify themselves. Members, can I see the hands? My apologies. Excuse me. I see Honorable Detroit, Honorable Molesan, Honorable Ryder, Honorable Eunice Karen. In that order, Honorable Detroit, start.
Honorable Chair, I think Honorable Ryder's hands was up. You can start with him. I'm between screens here. You can give me 2 minutes. Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Ryder, you can kickstart.
Yeah, thanks very much, Jay. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for the presentations. My first questions go to Selga, and I'm going to restrict myself to merely 3 points for Selga, because they're important points. I don't want them to get lost in the blur. So the first point relates to the legacy debt that's owed by municipalities to Eskom and to the water board. Am I audible, Jay?
Yes, you are. My apologies. You are.
Ah, okay. Thank you very much. Good. So it relates to the legacy debt that is owed to Eskom and specifically to the water boards. And some municipalities where this is overwhelming and it's actually undermining current service delivery because of, first of all, the actions of sheriffs of the court who come from time to time and attach assets. But in addition to that, it's taking all of the free cash flow that's coming into a municipality, which is going to repay legacy debt and therefore impacting service delivery. So my question to Selga is quite simple. What have you done to deal with this? Because that's massively impacting service delivery across numerous municipalities in the country. What have you done? Because when I wrote a question to the finance minister recently, the response was that Treasury had received no suggestions or comments or issues raising this matter, so they hadn't come up with a solution. What is Selga doing about the legacy debt? That's number one. Number two, non-revenue water. Any shopkeeper will tell you that if he buys stock into his business, puts a small margin, say a 50% marker, that's a big margin in fact, put a 50% margin on your goods, but then you lose 60% of your stock, your business is going to be out of business in a week. This is what's happening with many municipalities with non-revenue water. They're buying water from the water boards. They're losing the majority. They're still having to pay for the stuff, but they're actually running their water distribution businesses at a loss. Not only is that harmful to the potable water supply, wasteful, but it's also it's financially criminal. Let's be honest. Good. That's number two. Number three relates to Eskom and the cost of electricity, where municipalities, in many instances it's districts, in many others it's local municipalities, and certainly metros, where they are procuring electricity from Eskom at a bulk rate. They are then adding on a margin and then distributing the electricity to consumers. Now, that margin is an important thing because what it does is it allows for the cost of the reticulation system, maintenance, improvement, and expansion to happen. Also, historically, there was a little bit of fat built into that, and there might have been a bit of cross-subsidization of some other services. What's happened over the last 10 years at least is that NERSA has granted Eskom higher percentages of increases than they have granted to municipalities. So what that means is that margin has been squeezed. So there's less and less money available to invest in reticulation, and there's certainly, I don't believe, any money left to cross-subsidize any other services. So what is Selga's position? Those are the three questions I have for Selga. PBO, thank you. In response to what happened in the past financial year, I was wondering if you'd done any exercise. You spoke about the salaries, and I'm focusing probably specifically on provincial salaries. And I was wondering if there's any work that's been done on working out how much of the salary wage bill, certainly how much of the transfers that go to provinces go towards salaries, but after that, how much goes towards frontline service and how much goes to the back office management and the structures there. It would just be an interesting thing for me. You spoke about Minister Pashla with his unemployed doctors as well. He made a promise that we would see a big announcement in the budget about what would be done to fund those unemployed doctors. I haven't picked it up, and I wonder if PBO can point us to that miracle announcement that Minister Patla preempted the budget speech with, if you can tell us on that. Again, always my bugbear as a representative of Gauteng, e-tolls. I don't see anything on e-tolls. I don't see anything coming forward about how we're going to deal with that legacy debt. And it just seems that this keeps on getting pushed further and further. Maybe I've missed something. PBO, please guide me. Ms. Orlandi, you spoke about your slide 30, showed a very interesting picture where you took the municipality's own revenue into account, and that shifts the split between the three spheres quite substantially, and I think that's an interesting way of looking at it. Thank you. I just want to, it went from 8% to 28%. I'd just like to find out, is that 28% including billed revenue or actual collected revenue? Because I know there's quite a big difference between the two, if you can just indicate that. And of course, Siraj, yeah, I think that we don't agree on many aspects, on most aspects in general. G. Fekra, I think we also have slightly different views. I do agree with you, though, and I think that the balance sheet impact is going to be substantial. And I also agree that the process of monetization or the realization or the actual, it's not realization, but it's monetization of this amount is going to have unintended consequences. And I do think that that there's not enough attention being placed on that. I've been bashing that drum for a little bit of time. And then the last bit just related to reducing CWP because of bad contractors, and then having to increase the basic income grant as a result of that. It just flies in the face of logic. Thank you very much, Chair. Those are my inputs.
Thank you, Honourable Rider. Mtate Mletsane. Honourable Ditoy, do you want to come in first?
I'm ready. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, you can come in, then Honourable Mletsane will come after you.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chair. Thank you to Salga and PBO for the presentations. Four questions, Salga. According to you, what more can be done to realize value for money for the required impact relation to municipal interventions and capacity building programs to further assist the 140 municipalities that are struggling? And then what is Salga's view around the issue of project mafias in various municipalities which distract the delivery of some fund and infrastructure products? What is Salga doing to assist governments to address this issue? Chair, and then to PBO. According to the PBO, what specific steps should be taken to strengthen and improve local government supply chain management systems, finance, as well as the international control systems and address corruption, financial wastage, and the much-needed value for money, particularly on conditional grants expenditure? And lastly, can the PBO advise the committee how government could achieve value for money from the additional resources earmarked for safety and security sector? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Ntate Mletsane.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me acknowledge the both presentations. I think, Chairperson, the previous speakers have covered me because I wanted to find out from Salga their role in terms of assisting those struggling municipalities. What are they doing to assist them in order to improve their performances? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honourable, thank you, Ntate Mletsane. Honourable Eunice Karim.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry, I'm using my cell phone. It's not the best tool. Firstly, I think our committee in general for the last 4.5 years, or close to 5 years, have in principle supported Salga's claim for more funding, right? And, you know, they provided a structural underpinning for the problems about the new model of local government that we affect, and we didn't have a commensurate local government finance model. Absolutely correct. In fact, one of the culprits is speaking here. Although, to be fair to me, when I took over as chair, the white paper was done. But immediately, we had submissions from a very active Salga parliamentary liaison officer and the chair at the time to say, look, this ain't gonna work. And we agreed. That is chairperson. I think that's 1997, 1998, and again in 2000. But those structural issues surely can't explain the crisis we have in and of itself. While we support Salga's claim for more funds, obviously, is Salga doing enough to attend to what happens within municipalities? The mismanagement, the corruption, the incompetence. Every other day, chairperson, you shudder to open the city press really, or News 24. Never mind it's ideological, about what's going on in municipalities. Obviously, in some or other degree, it's happening in the provinces and nationally too. So we're not like looking down upon them. And I'm personally, as you know, chairperson, my main area of activity in UDF days was the civics, as we call them. So this is my area of interest. My heart has always been, you know, not in finances and justice and whatever else. So what I'm saying is, here's somebody who's very empathetic and sympathetic and supportive of local government. But, you know, Salga, does it do enough? I know Salga can't go and intervene in every municipality. They don't have the authority to do so. It's the provincial Salgas that must play some role. Even they are limited. But does Salga admit enough that the problems are not simply the system and our failures at national level to deliver, especially our committee, by the way, because we cover the three spheres in the NCOP, not so much the NA. Secondly, you know, NCOP as a whole has a responsibility to local government in the way the NA doesn't. So we more than anybody else, ourselves and COCTA, are meant to address this issue, and we admit that we haven't done enough. Or we've been failing to do what we asked for to get Treasury to actually effect. So it's, we agree, we are complicit. But why doesn't Salga admit at the mismanagement and whatever else is taking place at local government level? And what can it do? What does it actually do? Secondly, I mean, once we have the MinMax and so on, Comrade Chair, you also attended, and Selga's there, but there are separate meetings that Salga used to have with Treasury. I don't know if it still exists and what goes on there, because repeatedly they come here to Parliament, which is correct, and repeatedly we agree with them, but there's not much improvement. Thirdly, I was stunned to see, Chairperson, as I'm sure many of us may well be too, that, you know, only 2.3 million of the 10-point-something million indigenous, if I've got the figure right, Chairperson, I can't recall, but it seemed to me it's just slightly over 20% of people who are entitled to free services are not getting it. Now, surely that's not simply because the equitable share doesn't cover all the needs at municipal level. Surely, too, there are wrongdoings taking place at municipal level. I know it from my own constituency experience, as do others of you, that the indigent register in my own municipality, let's not go elsewhere, right, and in the one that I serve, are highly questionable for the nepotism, incompetence, the lack of proper records. It's not that people do wrong deliberately or willfully. It's just that they don't have proper records, and there are people there who have been applying years ago who should have been given a concession, who aren't, and yet others who applied yesterday and who don't deserve a concession are given it. All of those issues surely also contribute, not just the financial constraints that the municipalities face. But all I want to say finally, Chairperson, is we are not pointing fingers. We are three spheres of government, as we repeatedly said. Actually, when local government fails, it's a reflection on us at national level and provincial level. We're in the system together. We're not a federal system. We're a cooperative governance system. We take our measure of responsibility, our failures, right? And take me personally, because I've been involved in this sector in different over the last whatever years. I take my personal responsibility for my failures, right? Finally, Chairperson, sometimes, and this is wrong of me, I forget that it's not just a committee meeting and we all there, you know, how silly I can sometimes be. But, you know, for a moment, I forgot that obviously there are other people here from the provinces and elsewhere. I apologize for what I said at the outset, teasing you about being a doctor. But actually, it was meant to be a compliment, lest I misunderstood, Chairperson, that, you know, you're the only chairperson I know who asks us at the beginning of each meeting, Chairperson, how are you, each of you? Nobody else does that. I think that's very nice, very humane. So rather than saying a doctor and throwing the light on state of health, I think I should have the pastor. You know, you're concerned about us. And it's done sincerely, Chairperson. It's not done to seduce us to cooperate with you. It's done from your heart. So I apologize to the extent that I've been misunderstood, but I think deep down you and others in the committee, no, I didn't mean any sort of like untoward response. I was just saying, oh, okay, Dr. Mashlangu, I'm fine. That's what I meant. But I should have said Pastor Mashlangu. I apologize for that. Lest it be misunderstood. Thank you.
Thank you, Comrade Yunus. If it was someone else, maybe I would feel otherwise. But because I've been working with you in the committee, served under you as a chairperson from 2014, I understand you, and I know how to respond to you and how to take issues that you raise. So to me, it's not a problem, but the pastor also, you don't just become a pastor, but I think it's a compliment also to me. Any other hand? Secretariat?
That was the last one, Chairperson.
Okay. Before I hand over to the presenters, Salga and TBO, I think since we started in the sixth parliament, we've always been engaging and been concerned about the value for money, and also the capacity at the local government level, notwithstanding the challenges that we see in national and provincial, as indicated by Comrade Yunus. But national government and provincial government, if they are doing their work, they are doing their work at the local level. There's no other level where you can find people or constituents where you can say you are doing your work. And if things don't go right, the people who are to be blamed is the local government.
Hello, Chairperson.
Sure, irrespective to the airport, I was nearly caught up in a very dangerous situation whereby people banned they were banning the road, a new road, banning the road and whatever, because of water. I'm not promoting that and supporting that that needs to be done in that way. People need to raise their concerns, because is their right? Water is a basic right according to the Constitution of the Republic. But then we must not destroy what we have in order to raise our concern in what we need. Many a times in our report, we have been making recommendations about what needs to happen between local government, SALGA, meaning SALGA, COCTA, and national treasure. We have had several recommendations because of the concerns that we had that there's no value for money in most cases. Sometimes monies are being taken from municipalities because they are not used. They are taken back by treasury, or they are taken to some municipality that is utilizing the money. And we don't want to see that happen. But we can't help if municipalities are underspending in terms of what the conditions are saying. Also redirecting or misusing I don't know the correct word for that. But then the conditional grant, the MIG, Municipal Infrastructure Grant, it has been a complaint ever since. You know, since I've joined the legislature in 2009, it has been a problem. It has been a complaint that other municipalities, they even go to an extent of taking the MIG fund to pay salaries. It cannot be accepted. Those are the issues. There are many issues that we have identified. I know we have had several sessions with SALGA whereby we have tried to come up, identify things that are obstacles in making sure that the flow from ourselves as an oversight body, the national, provincial, and local, is fluent. So we have had recommendations. What we need to do as a committee now, I think we just need to take those recommendations further, because we still think they are relevant. We were on our sober mind when we took those decisions, and they were informed. To take it to 7th Parliament, to our legacy report for 7th Parliament to implement, hopefully the next executive in the next administration will be up to the task and implement those. I'm raising this to both bodies, and specifically to PBO. Mine is a request to the committee to advise us on how government could achieve value for money as an issue that we've been raising from the additional we also want, hence I believe and think that everybody must plan and do what has been said in the State of the Nation address. The president in several, I'm sure in two past State of the Nation address, he has spoken about professionalization of the local government, I mean of the public service, more especially on the local government. So we need to make sure that even if we do appointments, we need to do appointments that are going to service. In front or at the back of our mind, we need to put the people of South Africa, the citizens who are going to receive the services. I will start with SALGA to respond. And please, SALGA, when you respond, don't start presentation. Just respond to what we have, to clarify what we have raised.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. We are going to deal it with in this way. The technical questions I will allow Mr. Kwala and Lerato to deal with, and then I will deal with some of the more tricky political questions that has been asked. The issue of the construction mafia, we as SALCA, we must indicate that we have been working with different important security cluster departments, because we believe this is a crime. We don't want to give it any other name except that it's a criminal act. And we're happy that the president has taken this to heart. That is why they have established that national intervention committee that needs to deal with this issue, because it's a cancer that must be dealt with and dealt with effectively before it becomes a monster for government-related programs. Secondly, we agree with the committee that the matter of value for money must be attended to. If you look into our MARAT of intervention, whether it's the MASP program, MASP program is the one that assists municipalities with getting good quality audits. Check. Am I still protected, Chair? May I proceed?
Yes, we hear you. You're still on. Go for it.
Okay, okay, Honorable Ryder. We are having different intervention in different areas of work. In finance, for example, I was giving an example that we are having a mask, which we have assisted a lot of municipalities in trying to do the following. Number one, to ensure that the treasury office in municipalities are meant firstly by accountants who understand accounting, simple accounting. Secondly, by experienced professionals who understand local government sphere and finances, because you need to understand both as a leader, for example, as a CFO. So we do all of this. What we have realized is that in most municipalities that are generally small town and rural areas, you find that your biggest challenge is their inability to keep these professionals, because most of them, after dealing with their interns, they are given the responsibilities, they are given experience, then they move into bigger, more better paying positions in bigger municipalities. So that is why you find that most of these small municipalities are unable to manage their finances better. They are unable to deal with planning better. They are unable to deal with what we call a multi-year planning and budgeting, which undermines their ability to even spend the little that they are having. So as SALCA, we are trying to do all of those, but with this kind of internal incapacity brought by the municipalities that are unable to do. If you look at most of these weak municipalities that are being challenged, they lack internal capacity in terms of human resources, in terms of systems, in terms of better planning and better budgeting. So in so doing, it continues to be a vicious cycle because of the kind of finances that they are having, which are unable to keep good professionals. So that is another area that we need to look at, because you can't get value for money in an incapacitated institution. That is why we even engage in National Treasury to say we should not be taking monies from these municipalities because of lack of internal capacity due to the issues that I've raised. What we need to deal with is how, like COCTA did in the past, consolidate, how do we deal with it using that kind of intervention to ensure that in the long run, we build internal capacity in allowing these municipalities to have a dispensation where they can even be allowed to pay better for critical skills so that they are able to keep them. So that is some of the things that we are doing and continue to deal with in order to assist municipalities. We also must agree, Honorable Ryder, that as local government, particularly SALGA, were a receiving platform, meaning as we did before the local government election in 2021, we called on political parties in particular to ensure that the people that they will be putting on their lists are the kind that will first and foremost create the most important foundation, proper leadership. Because if you have proper leadership, that leadership will be able to know the kind of professionals that will come into municipalities, your MMs, your CFOs, and technical managers, who we know that through the intervention of COCTA, through their staff regulation, are demanding certain capacities and competences in order to make sure that those municipalities are important. So we'll continue to engage our political parties. If you check our presidency, they went to different political parties, the ANC, the DA, and other political parties, because we believe that it is about time that political parties understand that the kind of people that they give to local government must be able to understand and have an historical understanding of the development, the challenges, the responsibilities that has to do with local government. So it is important that we continue to raise that as we move forward. We have indicated in one of our engagement with ENCA, SALGA, that we are continuing to engage our local municipalities in relation to ensuring that how do we deal with internal challenges that are facing local government, your corruption. We indicated that one of the key things that we are working on is to ensure that we strengthen internal systems and at the same time strengthen public participation to create a transparent engagement, particularly on the process of supply chain, because we believe that's where the bigger challenge is. And as SALGA, we will continue to insist and in our workshops that it is key to ensure that you have what we call a system-driven institution, whereby everything, the system can be able to detect the red light, either whether we're not spending the budget or whether are we not keeping to our project plans. So that is part of what we will continue to do, honorable members, because we believe local government as a new important sphere of government, it is our duty collectively, in particular SALG, to ensure that we create that kind of an environment that will continue to keep local government working and functioning very well. On the other questions, I think the margins, the legacies, and the non-revenue water, I think Kwala and Lerato will deal with that, Chair. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Lerato and Kwala.
Yeah, good morning, Chair. Good morning to the members and good morning to the colleagues that are in the platform. So, Chair, my name is Zamo Kwala. I'm part of the SALGA team. I'm acting as the Chief Officer for Municipal Finance. So I will deal with some of the questions, then I'll leave the rest to my colleague Lerato, who was doing the presentation. The first thing that I wanted to highlight, Chair, is that agreeing with the sentiments that are coming in from the members when we talk about the issue of service level in general within the municipality, that a number of municipalities are struggling in that. So I would want to believe that most of the members here will know that some factors that are contributing to that problem are external. They have been mentioned in the presentation that came after us, highlighted some of those on issues of economic growth. The fact that people are just not paying for services, the unemployment rate that is high, the impact of the coalition government in some of our municipalities is probably understated when it's reported into media, but the problems that we experience in municipalities are much higher. But having said that, there are a number of internal factors that have been highlighted, and it's true that within the municipalities, there are internal factors. So what we have initiated as SALGA to add on other initiatives is that we have looked at Section 78 of the Constitution. That requires that a municipality that is struggling on a particular service must do an internal, objective internal assessment of its own capacity and then call for help where they believe that they are struggling. So we have initiated the process. We were aiming to present that to our NEC this week to get the approval of saying, how do we set up that structure which we call a support services? Support services would mean that we don't just go to a municipality and identify the problem, but we then galvanize support from various partners. So that support services will be made up of SALGA and a number of national departments, in particular, COGTA, Water and Department of Water and Sanitation, National Treasury. That's what we want to present, that we come together to go to a particular municipality and not only identify the problem, but provide hands-on support so as to augment the capacity of the individual municipality, with the hope that in the long term, the municipality would have built its own internal capacity. So then on the issue of the Lakers debt, I think my colleague will be able to respond to that one. I'll leave it to her. On the issue of non-revenue water, it's part of the intervention that we want to make. The point was made that in terms of the infrastructure, poor maintenance of the infrastructure is the biggest contributing factor to some of the problems that we are having. And some municipalities reported that non-revenue water is high as 40%. That's true. So that's the kind of intervention. We now have a mechanism that involves SALGA, DPSA, as well as Water Department of Water and Sanitation, where we have put in a team of the technical expertise involving the private sector. That is basically assisting municipalities, firstly, to detect where these leaks are and find way of solving it. One of the municipalities that have gone quite a long way in resolving this problem is Ekurhuleni. So we are also learning from Ekurhuleni of how they've been going around doing this, because it's a huge problem that we are experiencing in municipality, but we are providing that kind of support. On the issue of struggling municipalities, I think that section 78 is part of that, trying to assist in that regard. I don't want to repeat it. So the last point I'll talk about is the issue of the registration, indigenous registry. I agree that it's a big problem. It's always a moving target, because even the municipalities that are doing reasonably well in this regard, you find that the numbers are correct today, but they are different tomorrow, because some people get into the unemployed, some people get to be unemployed. So you require a municipality that is able to update this register quite often. And for a number of reasons, people do not get to be recorded. You'll remember that even during the high days of COVID, when people were applying for support from national government, there was always a problem that a person is recorded as an unemployed. But if you start to do the assessment evaluation, looking at the bank account, you find that there are monies that are coming in. So I just want to confess that really, this has been a bit of a challenge for municipalities to keep those records up to date, because some people who have registered and be part of the register, when they get to be employed, they don't come back and inform the municipality that they now have to put them back. So it requires really that as municipalities, we have to be on the top of the game and be updating this kind of register on a continuous basis. There's nothing else really that we can do beyond just getting that discipline and making sure that we do our part right. Lerato, perhaps I can leave the few that I've mentioned to you, because they deal with the issues of financial budget and stuff like that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just speak on the issue of the margins. One of the issues with regards to this problem is the challenge of municipalities not conducting cost of supply studies just to determine how much it actually costs to provide that service. They've been applying just normal increases that are suggested by the circulars that we receive from National Treasury. And also one of the the emerged issues that is affecting this diminishing margins is consumers who are moving away from the grid and opting for alternative energies, and particularly those consumers are the ones that were generally high consumers and paying consumers for municipalities. So what we are doing is, as SALGA, we are trying to assist municipalities to conduct these studies. There is a methodology that was that we have conducted and was accepted by NERSA, and which municipalities can utilize to do these determinations that are needed so that they are able to see whether they are providing those services at a loss or at a break even, or they're making how much margins from them. Honorable Ryder, in terms of the legacy, we're not necessarily aware, but what we have been doing with the municipalities who are on the debt relief is to for them to look into their ESCOM accounts to check in which to check and make sure that what they are being charged is actually a true reflection of what they are consuming as a municipality. But we will definitely look into that area to check which municipalities does have this challenge of legacy debt from ESCOM and water boards. I think the Honorable, my chair, and Ndate Gwala have addressed the issues. I know that in SALGA we also have a professionalization program that is led by our MCG cluster, which is also aimed to assist municipalities to professionalize and get those who are already in the system to professionalize. I think that's pretty much covered all the other questions. Chair, you'll indicate if we have not addressed some of the questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tim Salga, for your responses. I will now hand over to PBO Dr. Janshi and the team.
Thank you so much, Chair and members, for the questions and for the guidance for the guide as well. I think I will just comment on the value for money point, and I'll give the colleagues to come to the questions, and then I'll come in if there are any outstanding questions. But we really appreciate this guidance and questions in particular. I think the question on value for money, Chair and members, there's no shortcut to it. Definitely, it's a very important question, but I think some of the key consideration around understanding or dealing with the value for money, it's really the probably need for really the need for standardization of when you look at the standardization of the cost of service delivery, but or the cost of activities across government entities, but are across the regions, across provinces, in a way that you're able to say, this is how on average would expect government to spend on a particular project on activities, and that obviously allowing space for adjustments within the regions and so on. And my understanding has always been that there has been that in place where it gets updated annually, but maybe this part of oversight committees could also start understanding or inquiring about how is that standardization of service delivery is being used effectively, and does it really get used across, and how often that gets updated, particularly around the activities or the service delivery in itself, and how is the standardization working, and the, as part of oversight, it gets reviewed in particular. And I, in our view, and also in terms of which that could provide a bit of ensuring that you do get value for money, because what goes in standardization is it's a lot of a grind exercise to determine the average cost of activity and or a service in particular. So that's one way of looking at it. But also looking at when you look at the salaries in the state-owned entities, salaries in some of the municipalities and some entities, are so excessive, particularly around of the executives, are so excessive, which compared to other government entities. And the question is, how much is that it provides the value that is required? And clearly, when you look at the experiences, some of really has been a lack of value. Maybe again, the issue of we spoke about in our presentation, youth standardizing that as well, the salaries as well within government as a whole, kind of important. We spoke about the professionalization of the public sector, but that could also as well links a lot to come to the salaries, particularly at the executive level, and particularly salary is very excessive, and at means money of the time. Of course, you know, it's an issue of, you know, what we fail getting from such excessive compared to the value we're getting, but also compared to other state entities where you still get more value while people are paid quite relatively lower than those in the public companies or state-owned entities or specific municipalities in particular. And that will also ensure there's a bit of standardization around salaries in particular, and that would certainly go a long way in providing value for money in terms of spending by government in some of this area. And of course, another area is comparative analysis, where you often try to compare these across the sectors, but also do a good benchmarking. And that, for me, can go. One other area which has been explored a lot, particularly in the local government, relates to co-productions, where you service develop co-productions where you have the service users contribute and the committees as well on the outcomes expected, but also more creative public value. And I don't know how much that is used in local government. That could also go a long way in ensuring there is a service deliver, the service delivery, but also there's the value, public value created within the service delivery in the local level, but also probably across all the spheres of government. I think there's quite a lot of issues, but I think the question I'm saying, there's no shortcut. There has to be an oversight model taking into account these measures in place. And when we do oversight, we ask these questions around public, but more pointed on these specific areas. We could provide more detailed write-up in this over the next term. I'll let the colleagues to come and chair members respond to specific questions, and we will come back later if there are any outstanding questions. Thank you so much. I think, Kafiso, do you want to start?
Sure. Thanks, Dr. Yankee. Thank you, Dr. Yankee. I think
your camera is below. You went down. I don't know if you're sitting on a shorter chair or something.
Oh, yeah, but apologies.
Much better. Excellent.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr.
It's now fine.
And thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions. I will take the question that was raised by Honourable Ryder as to whether the announcements that was made by Minister Pasha regarding unemployed medical doctors, whether there's been a budget to address that. National Treasury did announce additional spending of 18.6 billion rand in this fiscal year and a total of 57.6 billion rand over the MTF period to ensure that the salaries of teachers, nurses, doctors, and other public servants are essentially paid. The spending is also intended to address the recruitment of nurses and medical doctors. We do, however, worry about the erosion of this designated funding when you consider the impact of inflation. And it would be remiss of us not also to flag that the overall health function is under pressure when you consider the per capita spending figures that we shared. With regards to a question that was raised by Honourable Du Toit, I didn't get all of the questions, unfortunately, but we can respond to those in writing after listening to the recording. But there was a question that was raised with regards to whether we will get value for money from the additional resources earmarked for safety and security. Without preempting the usage of the spending, the PBO has shared from the presentation that we are living in a country where we're seeing an increase in violent crimes, as well as a constraint in terms of police resources. There's one police officer for every 417 citizen in the country. An increase in additional spending to add resources, although we do think that it would essentially make some difference, there are also other underlying issues to be addressed to actually try to deter the increase in crime in the country. I'll let my other colleagues answer the other questions. Thank you.
Nelia?
Okay, thank you. Yes, I'll also respond to Honourable Ryder. Honourable Ryder, in terms of the salaries on a provincial level, I quickly did the calculation for the current financial year. On a provincial level, we spend almost 62% of the total revenue is allocated for salaries, 22% for goods and services, 5.5% is going is spending on capital assets, and on a provincial level, they also transfer a bit of money, 5% to non-profit institutions to do the work on behalf of the provinces. And then in terms of the other slide, on the division of revenue, when we include the revenue on for local government, to me that was also very interesting. It's the first time that Treasury included that in the budget review. I always wanted to do the calculation, but I didn't do that calculation. But in future, I will definitely do that calculation, and we can monitor it over time, because I think that's a very good indication, actually, on the total revenue collected from the three spheres of government. And then in terms
Lilia,
of... Yeah?
Just clarify whether is that the billed amount or is it the collected? I think it's more the billed amount. I think the question is also whether for local government is the billed amount. Yeah.
At this stage, I don't know, because the calculation was done by the Treasury. But yes.
Usually will be a billed amount.
I can look into the numbers and then I can answer Honourable Ryder. And then in terms of Honourable De Tooy, steps to be taken. That's a very difficult question, Honourable De Tooy, but what I can say is that the AG reports are so detailed, and in terms of the AG reports, each and every institution needs to compile an action plan, and I think it's then the implementation of those action plans and the monitoring of the implementation of those action plans. I think they, the oversight institutions needs to focus, because we are actually, even as government, we are very good in identifying the shortcomings, but we're not good in addressing those shortcomings, and then the M&E is actually also not good enough. And I think specifically in Parliament, we are actually working on the plan for the 7th Parliament, and there's a lot of things that we will implement or try and improve, or we should improve in terms of the oversight. But it's not just only Parliament. There are also provincial legislatures. There are national departments that has got an oversight responsibility over the money that they transfer to other institutions, specifically the public entities. So I think we really need to look at how we can strengthen M&E. Thank you. And also on a local government level, it's not only SALGA that's got an M&E responsibility. It's the National Treasury, it's provincial treasuries, it's the National Department of Corporate Governance, and it's the local, the provincial departments of corporate governance that has got oversight responsibility. So where do we start? Who's not actually doing the oversight role that they're supposed to do in terms of assisting municipalities? Okay, thank you. That's my contribution.
Siraj, I think you can come in.
Okay, thank you. The only comment on the GFICRA were from Honorable Ryder, and I think the one comment I will respond to is in terms of, we spoke about the balance sheet and possible unintended consequences. And I think my understanding of what the system that the Treasury with the Reserve Bank is busy setting up can to some extent allay the fears of those unintended consequences, because on the one hand, they're setting up this kind of system to ensure that we do have enough gold and foreign exchange reserves to cover the possibilities unexpected events that may happen within global financial markets, or shocks that may affect South Africa. I think there was a quite careful thought about how much that would be, and there were, from what I understand, there were discussions with, the international financial institutions and also the local banks. In addition to that, we see that the Reserve Bank is not selling off the gold and foreign exchange reserves. So in order to pay for that 250 billion, they basically going to be increasing the reserves on their own balance sheet. And this, one of the concerns that the PBO has had is that this sets up a very advantageous situation for the local banks and other members of the finance who may then be invited to increase their reserves in this account. So this is sort of like a really, really good position to be in, because on the one hand, the government's insuring against shocks that may affect the economy and particularly the financial sector. On the other hand, we're saying, well, we're going to still keep a huge cushion in case there's a problem, and we're going to pay you interest on increasing your reserves on a fairly safe investment, a very safe investment that you get paid at the, you know, at the repo rate. And so we'll be seeing big payments again to the local banks. There was one a lawyer who came and spoke at, I think it was in the public hearings at the Appropriations Committee, who said that it's not necessary to have that kind of change to GFECRA, but as a lawyer, I didn't want to comment on that. I mean, as a person, not a lawyer, as an economist, I don't feel capable of commenting on that, and it may make sense to sort of speak to the legal people in Parliament, but also legal people who work within the ambit of the Reserve Bank and the banks. The second thing is that, you know, out of that 250 billion, 100 billion is going to the Reserve Bank in order to be able to set up this new system, but also to cover those interstate expenditures. So we're concerned, you know, that 150 billion is coming to government and it's going to be used to reduce debt. But it seems that more could have come if they weren't as concerned about, you know, or setting up a system that can then, I think, allay concerns. I think we need to maybe put more thought into this system. I think it's a new thing for many of us, but yeah, I'll stop there, and I don't know if there'll be any more questions or comments on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom Treasury. I think you have covered most of the issues. Colleagues, you know that the stakeholders that are here as partners, they are welcoming. If you need more clarity on issues that have not been covered or you have afterthoughts, you can anytime, I think, access them as the important bodies in as far as the work that we're doing. I want to take this opportunity to thank both SALGA and PBO for the engagement. This is our last engagement for this financial year. We will maybe be engaging in the new financial year, a hectic year for us in the NCOP, more especially the Finance Committee and the appropriations. Thank you so much. Can I request the Secretary to help us with the minutes? You can be excused if you so feel. Okay, on the screen, can we all see the minutes, the 20th of March, 2024? Let's move.
The second page is attendees. Third page, continuation of attendees and introduction. Page four, page five, page six, what that is, page six, page seven, that's the end. Can I get a mover for the adoption of the minutes? Somebody speaking?
Eunice, yeah, I move, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Karim, moving a seconder.
Ogam seconds.
Thank you, Honorable Ogam. We had only one set of minutes, ne? Secretariat?
Correct, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. Before we close the meeting, can you maybe give announcements in as far as the meetings in the second, in the first quarter of the new financial year? What is before us?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. The first activity for the members, Chairperson, will be the briefing of provinces on the division of revenue in that week of 16 to 19 April, Chair. But there's also a meeting of the select committee on finance, also dealing with mandates, if I'm not mistaken, in that week. Then the following week, the committee will consider the negotiating mandates and the report on the Chifreka bill, a report on the second adjustment appropriation bill. Then a week after that, the committee will consider the final mandate on the division of revenue and the report. And then the last activity will be the consideration of the legacy report, Chair.
Thank you, Lubabalo. Honorable members, that's the announcement. It's not meant for discussion. This is what is before us. I think we'll be coming from the hard work of next week, being a resource, doing our political work. Then we'll meet a week after. Thank you very much. And go well for those who are going to travel. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen.